bringing the Bible to bear on the transgenderism debate in the BC legislature.
Gender is broadly consonant with one's biology, and how we were born is who we are meant to be. For me and thousands of my own constituents, this position is rooted in Christian faith. I might, for example, quote the following passage from the book of Psalms where David is talking to God, and he says, "I praise you, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made." Parents might read this verse to their children and assure them, "Your gender and your biology are not an accident, they go together. So rest in who you are. Rejoice in the fact that you are a boy or a girl. Celebrate your womanhood or your manhood."
On the feature today, an edited version of a speech given in the BC House earlier this year as part of a debate to extend explicit human rights protections to those suffering from gender dysphoria. In the news, the Alberta Education Ministry has shut down a body responsible for overseeing almost a third of all homeschooling families in the province amid allegations of financial impropriety. A big win for pro-family forces in the run-up to a provincial by-election in Ontario, and an apology to a pro-life group in Northern Alberta.
And now, Lighthouse News. Lighthouse News is a presentation of ARPA, the Association for Reform Political Action. Here's your host, Al Sebring.
Alberta's homeschool community has been thrown into turmoil after a move by the provincial education minister last week to shut down a body that's responsible for overseeing about 30% of all homeschooling families in the province. First, some background. If you want to homeschool your children in Alberta, you have to notify the government of this and use a so-called homeschooling board. That board has facilitators, people who are supposed to come into the home and inspect the education that's being provided to ensure it meets provincial academic standards. Homeschooling parents in Alberta are eligible to have some of their educational expenses reimbursed by the government. The way they get that money is to submit receipts for those expenses to their overseeing board. That board gets money from the province on a per-student basis and is then supposed to distribute that money back to the parents. Now, the largest single overseeing board in the province, the Trinity Christian School Association and its associated Wisdom Homeschooling Academy, has lost its accreditation as a private school operator because of allegations of financial impropriety. The association got more than $5 million from the province last year. Essentially, the government is saying that over the last 3 years, almost $1 million of that money wasn't actually redirected to the parents, and that the Trinity Board has been spending government funds inappropriately on things like food, alcohol, gift cards, presents, and even funeral expenses. The RCMP has been called in to investigate, presumably with an eye to laying criminal fraud charges. Globe and Mail published a story last week detailing the full list of the allegations. We've got a link up to that story from the Lighthouse News homepage. Trinity initially responded with an online statement accusing the government of telling partial truths. Then on Saturday, they posted a more detailed rebuttal of the allegations. It's too long to get into everything, but among other things, the statement says the unspent money, the $988,000, was part of standard operating procedure for the organization, and that it was to be used for home education programming like mediated learning, parent assistance, a book purchase program, and special learning needs assistance. On the issue of purchasing alcohol, the statement says that involved a staff banquet where wine was available. The funeral expenses? Wisdom says they have a widows and orphans fund. This isn't government money, but rather cash that's voluntarily donated by families, and that this fund helped a homeschooling family who had no cash flow at the time of the sudden death of the father-husband. Trinity has hired legal counsel and says they're looking forward to taking this entire case to court. The process that was used here is creating big concerns for the homeschool community in Alberta. Donna Trimble is with the group Parents for Choice in Education.
I would beg the question, if there was a publicly funded high school with 3,500 students, say in my own city, the city of Calgary, and financial impropriety was identified, let's just presume from the principal and vice principal, they're taking funds and they're pocketing funds that should have gone down to the students and the care of the students in the school. Would the Minister of Education shut down that school on October 25th, overnight, lock the doors, and tell the parents of those 3,500 students through the media that they are now basically truant under the law and they have 14 days to find a new school?
Trimble says the government had the option of appointing a public trustee to oversee the operations of Trinity and Wisdom while the situation works its way through the courts. She's also concerned that the remaining homeschool boards across the province don't have the staffing capacity to absorb the 3,500 students from Trinity. And she says in the current environment, some of those boards may not even want to do that.
If school boards are suddenly being put under massive audits that force them to make significant changes on how they hand out funding to parents, for parents to buy curriculum and so on and so forth, and it becomes a scary proposition for these boards, what are the chances that these boards are going to say, look, we can't take the chance of our board being shut down overnight by the province of Alberta. We've decided we're simply not going to support home education through our board any longer. And so even if everything is being done as correctly as possible, even if boards are feeling like they're doing all the right things, they're watching this play out. And of course, we don't know all of the story. The bottom line is, how can parents feel safe? And how can boards feel safe enough to be willing to take on the supervision of home education programs?
One other complicating factor here, the Alberta Home Education Association, AHEA, appears to be somewhat hamstrung in this whole discussion. The executive director of that group, Paul Vandenbosch, is listed as one of the facilitators for Wisdom Academy. In other words, he has a close relationship with them. AHEA has issued a statement on its website. The statement says in part that allegations against any home education provider are simply that, allegations. Trinity Christian School and Wisdom Homeschooling will no doubt defend themselves in this situation, and the truth will come out, end quote. In other news, a big political upset in Ontario late last month. A 19-year-old student at Brock University in St. Catharines won the provincial Progressive Conservative nomination for a by-election to replace retiring party leader Tim Hudak. During his nomination run, Sam Osterhoff was uncompromising on his socially conservative views on things such as parental rights and education, putting him at odds with party leader Patrick Brown. Osterhoff stunned observers by beating out some big heavyweights, including party president Rick Dykstra, who was a former MP for the area. The by-elections being held November 17th, we reached out to Osterhoff for an interview for Lighthouse News, but he responded by email saying he's simply too busy with the campaign right now. And an apology in Alberta. You may recall a story from back in July. The Pembina Pro-Life Society was refused admission to the 100th anniversary parade in the town of Westlock. That's north of Edmonton. Organizers first tried to tell them they weren't registered. Turns out they were. Then they were told their float, with the message, everyone is entitled to a birthday, didn't match the theme of the parade. And then they were told there was no room for them. Law enforcement was called, and they were threatened with a $2,500 fine if they put their float in the parade. When it was all over, the society board called in a lawyer who sent the town a letter detailing the violation of freedom of speech. Last week, the mayor of Westlock put an ad in the local paper, a formal apology for what happened. Society President Wes Wieringa says it definitely pays to fight these kinds of battles.
So I think the Lord worked this in a totally different way than we expected. I think we got way more publicity now than if we had had the float in the parade.
We've got a screenshot of the mayor's apology up on the Lighthouse News homepage. Back with more after this.
Find out how your MP voted on Bill C-225, Cassie and Molly's Law. Visit weneedalaw.ca to see the results of the vote. If your MP voted in favor of the bill, be sure to write them a note of thanks. If your MP voted against, we encourage you to send them a note expressing your disappointment. Please do so respectfully. Visit weneedalaw.ca to view the results of the vote and sample letters to write to your MP.
And we're back on the program. We told you last week that the House of Commons passed second reading last month on Bill C-16. This law proposes to add the words gender expression and gender identity to the list of prohibited grounds of discrimination in the Canada Human Rights Act. The bill is now off for committee study. Earlier this summer, the BC legislature passed an almost identical law. They called it Bill 27. It would add the same provisions to the BC Human Rights Code. As part of the debate on the passage of that law back in July, Liberal MLA Laurie Throness, a member of the government caucus, stood in the BC legislature to speak against his own government's bill. He ended up abstaining from the vote. We have the full transcript of his speech up on the Lighthouse News website. It ran a total of about 15 minutes, so we had to edit it for Lighthouse News. Here's some excerpts.
I want everyone to know that I respect and appreciate all British Columbians, no matter their gender expression or sexual orientation. I certainly wouldn't want to discriminate against anyone in matters of employment and tenancy and the other grounds enumerated in the BC Human Rights Code. Because the House is unanimous in this respect, it's difficult for me to share some concerns that I have with this bill and greater societal concerns as well. And so today I suppose I'm testing not the tolerance of this House for the transgender community, but the tolerance of this House for me and for people like me. So I have a few problems with the bill, and I want to explain myself in a thoughtful way. In the bill before us, we have a new category added, that of gender identity and expression. It was formerly subsumed under the category of sexual orientation, but this bill will lift it from that place to be given its own explicit category in law. I would point out that this has not been done for any other group. This is the only one. Taking this unusual step may well open up the door to other demands. And why would we not assent to others if we want to be fair to everyone? There are many vulnerable groups in society, not only transgender people. As a matter of law, this bill is unnecessary. The government has steadfastly maintained in this chamber for years that gender identity and expression are already covered under the category of sexual orientation. Nevertheless, to my mind, the elevation of gender identity and expression is not window dressing. It has great symbolic and political import. If it meant nothing, it would not have been requested. In my opinion, this special recognition reflects the strong and growing political influence of the LGBT community. Transgendered people are a vulnerable group for sure, but in a paradoxical way, they are also very powerful. Indeed, in this bill, they have turned around an entire government, caused it to do an about-face on a policy the government has stood on principle against for years. There are various indications of power we could turn to. When the White House is bathed in rainbow colors, it's not a symbol of weakness, but of strength. Look at Vancouver or Toronto's Pride Parade. These are all displays of power. Politicians and academics, human rights tribunals, the public service, LGBT organizations and the media, all these elements of society are ready to descend on the head of any offender, wielding two great weapons of shame and condemnation at the mere rumor of discrimination. Mr. Speaker, there are two logical alternatives regarding gender. There is the view of gender fluidity. The transgender movement is predicated on this belief that gender is fluid, that in some cases one's gender does not match one's biology, and a person must therefore transition their body to more closely resemble their true gender. There are many in this province who take a different view of gender, a fixed view. This view would say that while there is a reasonable range of natural variation, where a man may be more feminine or a woman more masculine, gender is not divorced from one's biology. It remains rooted in a person's sex characteristics, and there is a natural psychic attachment to one's biological self, which of course is internal and can never be changed. That bond is very difficult to break. Therefore, biology is destiny. Gender is broadly consonant with one's biology, and how we were born is who we are meant to be. For me and thousands of my own constituents, this position is rooted in Christian faith. I might, for example, quote the following passage from the book of Psalms where David is talking to God, and he says, "For you formed my inward parts. You knitted me together in my mother's womb. I praise you, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Wonderful are your works. My soul knows it very well." Parents might read this verse to their children and assure them, "You are wonderful and wonderfully made. You are beautiful just the way you are. Your gender and your biology are not an accident. They go together. There is meaning and value and purpose in the way you were made. So rest in who you are. Accept and be content with your body. Rejoice in the fact that you are a boy or a girl. Celebrate your womanhood or your manhood." I'm informed by my faith on this matter, but that isn't necessary, Mr. Speaker. You don't have to be religious to give this message to your kids. I think this is a positive, healthy message that many parents, religious or not, would like to teach their children and would like their children to be taught in school. To me, who takes the fixed gender approach, the message of self-acceptance is the healthiest message we can deliver to children, youth, and impressionable people. But finally, Mr. Speaker, I want to end on a positive note. I want to affirm all British Columbians, including gay and lesbian, bi, transgender people, and those who are not quite sure yet. You too are wonderful and wonderfully made. Your biology is beautiful. You bear the majestic and noble image of God Most High, and your life has meaning and purpose. However you have chosen to express yourself, may grace and peace be with you. Thank you.
Again, this was an edited version of Mr. Thronis's speech. We have the full version, cut and pasted from the BC Legislature's Hansard record, on the Lighthouse News homepage.
This has been Lighthouse News, delivering news and commentaries on today's current events to equip Christians for their task in the public square. Questions or feedback? You can leave us an audio comment by clicking on the answering machine button at the top of the Lighthouse News homepage, or you can send us an email, info@arpaccanada.ca. Be sure to join us again next week for another edition of Lighthouse News.